This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. If you look at the production schedule of any TV series or movie, you'll notice an awful lot of stuff that comes under the heading of post-production. There are color corrections, transfers, dirt fixes, mastering, onlining, sound mixes, all sorts of little adjustments to the sound of the picture. For a weekly TV show, it's sometimes an additional week or two's worth of fiddling. So many processes, so much hard work, that it's hard to remember that in the end, the thing you've touched up and fussed over is just going to be blasted through the internet, sometimes spending a lot of time out of those pipes and sailing through the air into and out of space itself, and then watched on an old TV, or worse, a phone with a half-inch speaker with a lot of other stuff going around it, like a living room with people talking, and also on TikTok, and kids arguing about whether they've done their homework, and noisy, distracting life drowning out the carefully mixed sound cues and the delicately reframed master shots. And God forbid someone in the post-production phase notices a boom shadow, that momentary dark line that appears on a face or at the back of a set when the boom mic repositions briefly in front of a light. Then we'll get out the paint box and work the shadow frame until it's barely noticeable on the screen, and certainly not noticeable by anybody else. I've been in edits where the only way to get the right mix of performance, tempo, and meaning is to use a shot that just that doesn't match another shot. Maybe the fork is in the wrong hand, maybe there's a missing person, maybe there's a big fat lingering boom shadow on the side of a frame, and then we'll try everything. We'll flip the shot, we'll blow up the frame, we'll fuzz out the detail, we'll try everything, and then eventually, you know, just give up. Because someone will say, okay, enough. I'll pay you $1,000 for every letter we get. And we all have to admit that no one really notices these things. I mean, at a certain point during post-production, when whatever you're working on is in the editing stage, you have to choose between making an edit that helps the pace, uses the best take, removes an element that you no longer need, any number of useful and necessary things, and one that just doesn't show the coffee cup suddenly appearing in the star's other hand. Because that's just continuity. And the rule is, continuity does not matter. I mean, it matters to some people, of course, people watching a cut of a film or TV show for the fourth or fifth time, people who are tasked with giving notes and suggestions to the editor and the team, people, in other words, who are looking for things that don't match. I mean, to them, spotting a fork on the table that wasn't there half a second before, or noticing that the star's head is in an entirely different position, well, these are the things that generate phone calls and visits to the cutting room. Now, the answer to these kinds of questions is always the same, and it has been delivered by writers and directors and editors to the continuity police since I'm certain, since Los Angeles was Orange Groves. If they're noticing that, we always say, we got bigger problems. Meaning, if the audience is watching your show and they notice the number of forks on the table or the coffee cup or the background actor who suddenly disappears, well, that's not a great indicator that they're deeply invested in the story. If they're obsessed with continuity errors, you've got a show or a movie in big trouble. Now, that never seems like a winning argument to the continuity police. Their point, and it's probably the correct one when you get right down to it, is that the whole thing should be a seamless, solid piece of work. It shouldn't start to fall apart after a few viewings. The coffee cup, in other words, does actually matter, because good cabinet making means taking care of all of the joints and hinges and measurements, not just the ones that people see. Now, the counterargument is, sometimes in the entertainment business and in life, when you really get down to it, you have to make choices between what's good for the overall mission, in this case, making a show that's funny and fast-paced, and the professional best practices way of doing the job, in this case, making sure all of the edits agree with every other edit. Because the job here is not carpentry. It's show business. And in this business, we're judged on how well we make you forget your watch, forget the other things pressing on you. Forget time itself. In this business, our work product is forgetfulness. Now, the first trick is knowing when you're making wise choices and when you're just being lazy. Knowing when it really doesn't matter to the audience if the sandwich the hero is making suddenly looks half-eaten, and when that kind of corner cutting sends a subconscious message to the viewer that none of this is real. It takes me out of the story, is something the continuity police often say. I saw this mistake and now I'm out. The spell is broken. Now, my usual response to this is to say that I'll sacrifice pretty much anything for the sake of a faster, funnier show. Faster, funnier is what my side of the argument always says. Keep the pace up, keep things moving, and no one has time to notice the things that suddenly aren't there. But you'll get letters, the continuity police say. No, we won't, is how I answer. Because we never do. Because people just don't really care about that stuff. But don't you want them to care is the follow-up question. And it comes down to this. I want the audience, like the people in my life, to pay enough attention and care enough to follow the story and stay involved with me. But I don't want them to pay so much attention and care so much that all they notice are my flaws and my mismatches and my lack of true continuity. I'm better. Shows and movies are better. We are all better when you don't look too close. But we do it anyway, and why is that? And I think it's for the same reason that when you're driving in your car and you're a little lost, or maybe a lot lost, driving through an unfamiliar area, sometimes for no reason, you just instinctively turn down the radio, which is a pointless thing to do, really, because the radio is not making you more lost. You can drive and listen to music. We've all done that. But I think what's happening there, and what's happening in all of these elaborate post-production fiddles, is that you suddenly realize that a huge part of your life, where you're going, where you are, how are you going to get unlost? Whether anyone is going to watch your show or like your movie or want to see it again, whether the Writers Guild, SAG, and the producers and studios will ever make a deal, whether we'll get back to work or not, all of that totally out of your control. You're lost. We're lost. We're all lost most of the time. And when that happens, you just want naturally, you just want to do something, anything to take back a little control. So you reposition the frame a little bit. You re-record a sound effect. You turn down the radio as you search for a street sign. And there's a point at which in any production, you're getting closer and closer to the line where what you do doesn't really matter. I mean, yes, you want to make a great show. You want to have hilarious dialogue and appealing characters. But there's a point where other things just gain in importance. Promotion. Audience awareness, other shows out there, out of your control. Network audience, premiere date, earned media coverage, out of your control. The big things in your control, dialogue, character, story, quality, well, they're what got you to the place in the beginning. The littler stuff, the sound mix, the color, the boom shadow, well, they're what you mess around with to get back your sense of control and direction. But in the end, there's really not much you can do except, you know, turn the music back up and find a place to park. And the other thing you do when you're lost or confused or nervous about the future is you try to figure out where you were when things last made sense. So let's go back to the start of the corn maze. Let's retrace our steps from the freeway off-ramp. Let's take off the shelves and rebuild this goddamn IKEA desk. And I guess what makes me think about all of this is, well, it's where we are right now in the entertainment business. We are in the post-production too late to fix. Where the hell are we? Turn down that goddamn music phase. So I thought I'd tell you about how hard it is, or how hard it used to be, to cast a television show, just a small thing really, but emblematic of the way things used to work, because there was a time when things really did work. So the first thing to remember is that there were two main players in the TV business, the studio, which produced the show, and the network, which licensed the show, or rented it basically, and showed it to their audience. The business worked this way because it was required to, is regulated system, and the rules that governed it all were called the financial interest and syndication rules, which basically said that one company can't both make a show and also own a network. So the studio fronted the money to pay the entire production tariff in the local patois. They deficited the production, meaning they agreed to lose tens of millions of dollars up front in exchange for the potential bonanza that existed if the show lasted long enough to go into reruns, and long enough was defined as roughly 5 years or 100 episodes. It was in the long-term interest of the studio to keep costs and the financial risk down. But since it's in their short-term interest to supply the buying network with a dazzling product, I mean, the network didn't deficit anything. They just sold advertising time, playing a shorter-term game. So if you wanted the network to put your show on, it was a good idea to cast big stars in the show. Big, expensive stars. Still is a good idea, by the way, for basically the same reason. That's what people like to watch. Now, occasionally, for a big star, or what we used to call a major piece of talent, the network would agree to kick in a little money over and above the fee they'd already agreed to. This was called breakage, which is weird because it really didn't represent any kind of break at all. What it represented was two disparate parties working together to get what they both wanted. So during the casting process, the network would theoretically be open to breakage for certain names, but only as a last resort, and they'd never tell you until the very last minute. The resulting studio network negotiations were something out of a pincher play. Two cheapskates trying to avoid picking up the tab for dinner. So it scenes kind of went like this. There are eight of us in the room. We are all reviewing the casting lists of potential cast members for our show. I like a lot of these names, says the network executive. Me too, I say, especially, and then I name one of the actors on the list. I like him a lot too, says the network vice president. Me too, says the studio vice president. Me too, says everyone else in the room. And then the network vice president says, but he's expensive. And then the studio vice president says, yeah, very expensive. Is that a problem? Asks the network. I don't know. Is it? Asks the studio. For an important project like this, we should be prepared to pay top dollar, right? Asks the network. We? Asks the studio. Whoever, shrugs the network. The point is, can we afford him? Asks the studio. I don't know. Can we? Asks the network. I don't know. Can we? Asks the studio. And then everyone would be silent for a bit and the meeting would be over. And then later, what would happen is that they'd all agree on some number for a breakage. Everybody would kick in some, push some, take a slightly bigger risk because it was in their general interest to do so. Their aligned interest to do so. Because everybody, in other words, had a little piece of the action, a little different part of the game to play in which the upside was great for everyone, so everybody wanted to give the project the very best shot. And that is where we were when show business last made sense. To me, anyway. Everyone doing business with everyone else. And, of course, yelling about money and points and a lot of other things, but eventually settling on breakage. Eventually giving in a little bit for the bigger pot of gold at the end. Now, I don't know how to get back to that, but I don't think it's going to be as hard as some people think it is. We just have to start by turning the music down and stop worrying about continuity. And that's it for this week. Next week, we'll see how long we can all hang on. For The Ankler, this is Rob Long with Martini Shot.